Hi, on the 5th and 6th of June 2024, I'll be speaking at the largest AI event in Asia, Super AI in Singapore, at the iconic Marina Bay Sands. Alongside brilliant minds like Edward Snowden, Benedict Devon, and Balaji Srinivasan, I'll be on a stage exploring the extraordinary potential of AI and the profound change it represents, not just for financial markets, but also for the world as we know it. With over 5,000 attendees and over 150 side events, Singapore will become a vibrant hub for a full week from the 3rd and 9th of June. Visit superai.com to register and join me with 20% off tickets using the code REALVISION. Use the link in the description and I'll see you there. It's going to be incredible.
Is this stock rally here to stay? Welcome to Real Vision Daily Briefing. It's Monday, March 4, 2024. I'm Ash Bennington. I'm joined today by Mark Ritchie, the second analyst at Minervini Private Access. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Good to see you, Ash. Great to be back on Real Vision as always.
Great to have you back, man. We were just champing at the bit to get on the air. We were having a great conversation about what's happening in these markets. Obviously, lots to talk about here today. Big picture, Mark, what's your view of what's happening right now?
Well, I don't want to say bull market everywhere, but you know, listen, it's clearly new bull market in stocks. And what I mean by new, you know, say in the last few months, or confirming what is, you know, a new bull market. Obviously, then of course we've got, you know, GLD closing at new all-time highs. That's certainly noteworthy. Bitcoin within an eyelash of that. I just think, you know, we're depending on your time frame, at least in equities, and we can start there. We're still early in the intermediate to longer term, but short term we're definitely stretched and extended, and that's a positive or negative depending upon, again, how long you are. And sort of your risk tolerance. So yeah, we can talk about, you know, which element of that you want to tackle first.
Gosh, all of it, Mark. This is great stuff. There's so much to talk about here. First, let me pick up on something you just mentioned when you're talking about this idea of intermediate short-term versus long-term. Talk a little bit about how you quantify those time horizons and what you mean when you say potentially overextended a little bit here in the short-term.
Well, listen, I think maybe even the last time I was on was right around sort of the bottom in November, where the market rallied and everybody, you know, was really skeptical, pessimistic, negative. General consensus was, you know, this is even all the breath, positive thrust we had off the lows, you know, was not taken to be very positive. And then in relatively short order, we had a strong lockout rally all the way into the new year. Yeah, some of it was based upon the Fed pivot, of course. We can get into, you know, FOMC policy, but the reality is the market has been extremely strong and new all-time highs on the NASDAQ, new all-time highs on the S&P 500, everything but the Russell, and sort of in sequential order. What's ironic is, you know, the NASDAQ is a really good example. Made new all-time highs and sentiment didn't get overly bullish, constructive, but nothing close to a top. And then you had people calling it a bubble. How does the stock market go into a 2.5 year bear market, make new all-time, the minute it makes new all-time highs, we have a bubble? There's a lot of sort of armchair macro folks that are saying, this is some type of a bubble in equities. And I'm saying, you know, according to our work, we just don't see that. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, well, let's talk about exactly why that is. One of the things that I think has a lot of folks spooked, why this rally is not as beloved as it might be, perhaps, is this idea of market breadth, the idea of the Mag 7 kind of crowding out everything else in the space. Let me just run through a course measure here, right? So Dow Jones Industrial Average, trailing 12 months, it's up about 17%. S&P 500 up 27% or thereabouts, just under. NASDAQ 100 trailing 12 months up over 48%. What you see here is this big cap tech rally disproportionately pushing the NASDAQ 100 higher. talk a little bit about market breadth. Talk a little bit about the concerns that maybe some folks have. I know that you are not just bullish, but you have some positive sentiment view on market breadth. Talk a little bit about why that is and how you know what you know.
Well, first of all, remember, risk management always comes first. So, you know, I can have really strong opinions on a lot of these things, but you know, when the information changes, I change accordingly. And I was just as, you know, potentially skeptical of some of the rallies even we had last year. And, you know, all the way back to June of 23, we had this strong move off the lows. You know, our work at MPA basically called for a bottom. All of our long-term models went on a buy. But throughout the duration of last year, the breadth was, you know, pretty lackluster. And the biggest thing was you'd get these rallies, you know, and then they would fade. Specifically, the only area that was holding, to your point, was sort of that mega cap, you know, call it the Mag 7, however you want to define it.
Right.
Very small niche. And you're absolutely right. Listen, the concentration. Yes, this market is very concentrated in certain areas. But, you know, this chart that I have up here just shows, you know, new 52-week highs all last year was never very high, peaked in the summer. And you can see an entirely different dynamic. That's new stocks making new highs relative to new lows on the NYSE, which is, you know, not cap weighted the way some of these others are.
Right.
The percentage of stocks in long-term uptrends, while on the NASDAQ, it's still only say 55%. It has held. But then say on the NYSE, you've got 70% of the market now that is in new long-term uptrends, which is constructive. Now,
I guess I'm trying to parse out in my head right. How you see this broader breadth in terms of long-term uptrends while still seeing this dramatic outperformance. I mean, I guess the answer there is you can be weakly positive in an uptrend versus the kind of insane level of price appreciation that we've seen in the Mag 7.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, the other thing I want to say about even these breadth divergences and that kind of thing, where okay, the market's trending up and the breadth is deteriorating. Well, and this is where it's sort of like context is everything. And the first thing, though, I would say is a divergence in breadth is not always the best timing indicator. In fact, it usually isn't. It's just an indicator, okay, that let's say from here we get more concentrated, I would continue to get a little bit more concerned. Not saying that that can't happen. And what I often say is any divergence in the market tends to correct itself through time or price or both. But it doesn't mean that, you know, tomorrow the market has to fall if there's, you know, some type of a negative divergence or a positive one. That means it has to rally the next day. It's just right. Sort of telling you that, you know, under the surface, this is going to have to be, you know, corrected at some point. Now, you know, what I wanted to say, though, is if you look at, I don't want to say that the concentration and breadth is sort of old news. What I'm saying is there have been more groups.
Well, it is, you're right. It is old news.
It is a bit of old news, but what I'm saying is it is at least expanded some. So when someone says, well, you know, NVIDIA is the only thing pulling the market higher, that's just not true. If you look across, you know, we've got multiple other groups, even in tech, that are doing well. Are there still areas that are lagging? Yeah, absolutely. And where this is where I was saying, look, in the short term, all the leaders, all the leading bulls are well out of the barn. But that doesn't mean that this rally is on, you know, thin air or thin legs. So this is where we want to watch from here. Do we get confirmation? And does risk kind of go out the curve? So if the Mag 7 is the least risky equities, which clearly that was where the money started even last year, does that money rotate other places? And I'm saying it has gradually been doing that. Maybe not as robust as even I would like. Well, guess what? You got to trade the market and invest in the market that's in front of you, not the one you want. Right. And you got to play the cards you're dealt. And what I'm saying is if you actually look over, especially since November, it has broadened to some degree. And we've got other areas, areas of consumer retail that have done well, other areas of software that have done well. And anybody who's followed some of my work for a while knows, you know, I like to look at the Russell and sometimes the mid cap to sort of see, can we get money then rotating other places? Well, the S&P mid cap just made a new all-time high closing, you know, Friday today. That's bullish. Now, that doesn't mean we have to go off to the races, but it means at least money is rotating, you know, to riskier areas, if you will. The Russell 2000 has been in this massive base for quite some period of time. Now, it has lagged badly for good reason. Here's another, I don't want to say old news, but if you run through the reasons for why the Russell has lagged, okay, what areas of the stock market are most sensitive to high rates? Smaller cap companies who cost of capital is more impacting their business. Is it possible that after, you know, 18 months, that news is already in the price? Certainly possible. So you have to ask yourself, like, if small caps start to break out here, everyone's, I think a lot of the fundamental macro guys are going to hate it. And I'm saying, especially if they start to lead and money rotates, where maybe the Mag 7 pauses, pulls back, you know, generally, gently, not violently, and you get, you know, areas like the Russell and the mid cap start to move, that would be the healthiest sign, in my view. Doesn't mean it has to happen tomorrow, but if that really gets in gear, you're going to see breadth then improve from here. It's, and using the analogy of like the party, you and I are hanging out at a party and we think it's late and the party's starting to die down. Then all of a sudden waves of new people start showing up and realize, well, maybe this party, you know, is going to, you know, reignite itself and keep going. That's precisely what will happen if the mid cap and the Russell really start to break out. And whether or not that's for market is always forward looking. So if the Russell's looking out 6 to 9 months, and starts moving higher, it's at least telling you that rates certainly aren't going up and that potentially recession is off the table. And, you know, if you look at some of the cycle work we also look at for in terms of this year, the, you know, fourth year presidential cycle tends to be quite constructive for equities, especially in the back half of the year. Doesn't mean we won't pull back. I want to be clear about this. And this is where I was saying, depending on your time frame, a lot of things are extended right now. So everything you buy, you've got to be cognizant of the fact of a pullback would be normal at this point. But our general work would suggest that pullbacks are likely to be shallow and potentially viable. Furthermore, if you look at, say, cycle work of what is equity performance after the first rate cut, if there's no recession, that's a big if. If there is no recession, equity performance following the first Fed rate cut is quite robust for the first 6 to 12 months. So I'm saying it's very, very possible. And my base case would be that it's a new bull market in equities. And we're in the early innings, if you will. And so pullbacks should be shallow-ish, mid-single digits, probably no more than 10%, and seen as a potential buying opportunity. But, and this is where right now you're seeing a lot of the best names that look, wow, they've gone too high. Well, I would wait for them to rebase. I don't ever like to chase. You know, our general philosophy is buy right, sit tight. You know, if you bought correctly, or for those who are already long this market thinking, can it continue? I'm saying, yes, it can absolutely continue. And that's where I would be looking at, say, the mid small cap areas. Look, if those don't get involved and we continue to see just more and more money chasing fewer and fewer names, you know, then I'm going to continue to stay much more sort of mid-gear on this overall rally. Still doesn't mean, though, that you shouldn't stick with, you know, potential names that are acting well and that are really breaking away here, because I still think we're early. And if you study just, you know, historically, after the markets have multi-year 20% plus corrections and then make new all-time highs, is usually not coincident with peaks or tops. Furthermore, I would say even sentiment right now, it's stretched, but not extreme, and nowhere that would lead me to say, you know, we're close to a peak or anything like that.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Join over 5,000 attendees for the largest AI event in Asia at Super AI Singapore, June 5th and 6th, 2024. Raoul Pal, Benedict Evans, Balaji Srinivasan, Edward Snowden, and over 150 others will join the industry's most influential to explore and unveil the next wave of transformative AI technologies. Singapore will become a vibrant AI hub for a week from June 3rd through June 9th with over 150 side events that will make for unparalleled networking opportunities. Visit www.realvision.com/superAI for 20% off tickets with the code REALVISION or click below.
Hey there. Thanks for tuning into the Real Vision Podcast Network. After the holidays, we could all use a little extra cash in our pockets. After all the gift-giving and festivities, we still need to buy the everyday things we need. Make sure you're getting cash back on all of your everyday purchases with Ibotta. Ibotta is a free app that gives you the most cash back every time you shop on hundreds of items from groceries to beauty supplies to toys. So make sure you're beating inflation no matter what you're purchasing. The average Ibotta user earns $145 per year. That could cover the entire cost of a shopping trip, buy that flight you've been eyeing up, or that music or sporting event you're dying to go to. Other apps give you points that don't amount to much. With Ibotta, just add your offers in the app, upload your receipt, and get real cash that you can cash out to your bank account, PayPal, or gift cards. Join more than 50 million savers and earn cash back every time you shop from over 2,700 brands and retailers, including Lowe's, Macy's, Sephora, Best Buy, and more. Right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 just for trying Ibotta by using the code REALVISION when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app to start earning cash back and use code REALVISION, all one word, when you register. That's Ibotta in the Google Play or App Store and use code REALVISION.
Well, Mark, there's a nice, crisp, definitive position there. We appreciate you taking it. By the way, you mentioned something earlier. You said that the perception that this market is on skinny legs. Let me show you my favorite meme of the week. I don't know if you've seen this one yet, but this is the great meme that's going around on right now on Reddit and elsewhere. I'll just tell people, for if you're listening to this on audio, it's this picture of this rickety looking third floor deck that's been built onto a house and it's being held up essentially on two stilts, and they're labeled NVIDIA and Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Well, obviously that isn't a deck that you and I want to be hanging out on. Yes. And I'm saying that I think that there's more support than this picture would generally right. You believe, at least for the stock market. I'm not saying, I'm not an economist. Is it possible we're still going to have a recession? Yeah, but I'm saying the market seems to be saying or discounting the fact that we are not, or that if we are, it is going to be very mild. Listen, should price action dictate otherwise, that's when you adjust. And look, if we see another one of these, periods where things just come crashing back down, that's where you adjust. I don't have a crystal ball and neither does anybody else, which is why I'm, always making calculations in real time. But I'm saying, look, the trend is your friend right now. And it's not just in the US. You've got a number of other equity markets. Europe looks good technically. Japan and other parts of Asia, minus China, looking very constructive as well. Right. I'm not going to say China's going to join the party, but if they do, what's that going to do for risk on? I think this is not just a U.S. Based phenomenon.
Well, Mark, you are a U.S. equities specialist, which is why we wanted to spend so much time talking about this particular topic. But you broaden it there, and there are a lot of other things happening. Let's do a quick speed round, touch on some of the other things that are happening in these markets. Bitcoin, gold, this stock, a New York Community Bank Corp, that's caused a bit of concern about lending standards. Where do we start? Well, let's start with gold, actually. Let's talk a little bit about gold. Obviously, all-time highs there, as you mentioned. Let's talk a little bit about that price action.
Sure. So let me caveat by saying a few things. One,
by the way, 2,115 right now on my screen right now for price of gold.
Right. So if you look at the GLD, which is a little bit, I don't want to say it's sort of the retail vehicle for tracking gold, Friday closed close to, I think it was an all-time high close. And then today, certainly an all-time high close. And what's most interesting to me is...
For the folks who don't know, this is the Spider Gold Trust. Gives retail investors access. They can buy it as an ETF. Much easier to own in your brokerage account.
Right. And so I didn't check to see, like, you know, where did spot gold, has that made a new all-time high? The point I want to make, though, is it seems to, when a market starts making new all-time highs and not a lot of people are talking about it, that gets my attention. Where mid of last year, it looked like gold had a big false breakout and then sort of failed, you know, sort of a big head fake. Gold's had a number of big head fakes. The Russia invasion of Ukraine was one. You know, and a lot of people following the gold market have been calling it, there's a, what I call like the mother of all cup and handles. That sucker's over a decade long. That is a massively potential bullish implication on that chart. Now, I don't trade on decade long timeframes, but listen, when something's under owned and starts moving, that's often, it catches people a little bit off guard. The other thing is we sort of had a big shakeout on that ISM news a few weeks ago. Gold closed poor on the day, reversed for the week. I think it shook out a number of the weak hands and now it's starting to move higher. The $64,000 question, of course, is this just another head fake? And is gold sort of lost some of its luster because of Bitcoin? And you know, you hear people making that argument. Well, Bitcoin is the new gold, and gold isn't going to get as much love. I would look at them sort of independently. Mm. And again, I like the risk reward here in terms of it, if this follows through, positioning is not very long gold right now. Sentiment on gold miners is awful. You know, it's just sort of been one of those areas that a lot of people have disappointed a lot of folks. So could it easily start to move? And again, if we are at the peak of the rate cycle, that would be bullish for precious metals. Again, gold is not an area of specialization. I've got chopped around myself in this a few times trying it. But again, I see a chart formation like that with a decent risk reward. I am interested in following it. Full disclosure, I have a small position. If we break out further, I may add or see how it acts from there and look for another, you know, low risk entry to sort of extend leverage. But I think it should be on people's radar. But again, with everything else sort of going on, we can get into Bitcoin next. There's just been other areas I think that have gotten more attention. And even I was a little surprised going Friday. Holy cow, gold's starting to rally here. What's going on there? Closed on okay volume. And sometimes those are the best rallies, meaning it doesn't look like it's the time people have given up on the trade and sentiment isn't, you know, overly bullish. And then all of a sudden, everybody has to sort of scramble to put their gold back on that they sold because inflation was coming back and that type of a thing. So, you know, if you believe price is truth, which at least to some degree, it always is in the near term, gold may be sending us a signal here. And it also could just be, again, flows. You know, how many folks are sitting there going, look, maybe I want to buy a little Bitcoin, maybe I want to buy a little gold, maybe I want to buy a little anything that's not, that gives me a little protection against, for lack of a better word, dollar denominated or their local currency denominated assets. And gold has always served as a good hedge against that. So,
well, only for about 5,000 years.
Well, right, certainly longer than Bitcoin. I know that that's always, some people think it's one or the other. I think, again, I don't think you have to be tribal about gold or Bitcoin. I think you can own both, have a risk management plans for both. And am long, and I would be long here.
Well, unfortunately, tribalism just seems to be where the country is at right now. But it's silly to look at investments the way people look at politics, at least in my view. Let's talk a little bit about something you set up there rather nicely, which is what's happening in terms of flow of funds and the digital asset space. Boy, I just want to read through some of these prices because crypto right now is just so hot. First and foremost, Bitcoin above 76,000 right now on my screen. Ethereum over 3,500, Solana over 125, XRP getting close to 65 cents, Cardano just crossed 77 cents on my screen. I mean, there's just a lot of green here. Bitcoin up, trailing 7 days, 23%. ETH up about 12% trailing 7 days. I mean, these are big moves. We're not at all-time highs, I don't think, on any of those coins, just because of the cyclical nature of this space. Boy, but Bitcoin is really close, within striking distance of that 69,000 high.
Right. I mean, yeah, if the title of today's show might be, you know, sort of new all-time highs everywhere, because that's kind of a little bit what it feels like. And you know, we were talking about this beforehand. There's a lot of points I would make specifically about just focusing on Bitcoin. And The first would be, you know, this dynamic that's going on with the ETFs. And I think a lot of people in the crypto space who I really respect. Not to mischaracterize anything that I'm saying as being, you know, that they don't know what they're talking about in terms of the technology and all those kinds of things. I think Bitcoin is a very strong fundamental argument. And if you believe, you know, whether it's digital store of value, all those different things, I think you have to sort of put that to the left for now. Because I think this move that we're seeing in Bitcoin is much more dynamic, specifically about flows and plumbing.
We're going to take another quick break and be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5103 declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
By the way, I've got to say, Mark, before we got started here, we were talking about this. You gave an absolute clinic on the way markets work. By the way, to reinforce the point you just made, the two are not logically exclusive here. You can really be very bullish on the long-term technology of crypto, but also say there's a phenomenon happening right now in markets, or seems to be happening, that may be driven by the underlying dynamics of the way markets work, about the way assets are managed in the United States. Boy, you were so eloquent on this. Give us the case. This is such an important point.
Yeah. Well, listen, what ultimately drives prices, you know, you hear people all the time saying, yeah, well, why did XYZ go up today? More buyers than sellers, right? That's always the, or why did it go down? More sellers than buyers. But it's the institutions, the large players that are ultimately going to take these markets to wherever they're going to go. And what I want to suggest, though, is specifically the way money flows in to certain products is often going to be, not often, is the driver. And what I want to suggest is, okay, there has been very little option for exposure for certain institutions to crypto in general or to Bitcoin specifically. Now, if you know anything about the RIA world, registered investment advisors, they have a whole bunch of rules that must be met in order for them to put clients into assets. And I can't remember the number you gave me, Ash, but I basically said, and folks can do a little bit of due diligence. Just look in the US specifically, how much money is being managed in RIAs.
I don't know the exact precise answer to that question, but order of magnitude, it's like double US GDP. It's something like 45 trillion with a T, trillion, 10 to the 12 US dollars.
It's an enormous sum of money. And a large percentage of that sum of money runs through these larger platforms. So for folks who don't understand, if you and I run one of these large RIAs, and maybe we've got $1 billion in AUM, everything then we do runs through sort of these products platforms, whether it's Morgan Stanley Wealth Management or, you know, Fidelity, LPL. There's a bunch of these big ones, and every product that's on there has to be approved and meet a whole bunch of certain due diligence specifications so that we don't put our clients in, you know, highly risky stuff. So for anyone who says things like, oh, well, RIAs could buy GBTC. No, they cannot. Most of them could not because it's OTC. Doesn't check the box. Now, some independent ones, sure, but a massive swath of money has been waiting for an on-ramp, and there's been zero on-ramp. You know, well, there was futures. RIAs, almost none of them can even trade futures. So I'm saying of that trillions of dollars, there has been no way for them to allocate to the space. And right. I could tell stories, but I've heard many different stories, and I know different RIAs that were like, well, I would love to put my clients in this. There is no option. So as of 6 weeks ago, Finally, the on-ramp finally opened up. And for anyone who said that was a sell the news story, they don't understand. Yeah, sell the news story for about a week.
And then,
you know, the on-ramp finally really opened up. And I'm saying there are literally cars jammed on that thing trying to get on the highway that is Bitcoin at this point. And whether it's IBIT, FBTC, whichever one, those are finally available to a large swath of money that was never available before. And some of them, if you think, you know, the buying is just over, I would suggest it's probably in the first inning. Furthermore, those houses, whether it's Fidelity, whether it's BlackRock, they have massive marketing arms and people out there that are going to be saying, tell all of our, everybody on our platform or that uses our family of products that we finally have an option for them if they want to get folks involved in BTC. So I think it was conservative estimates somewhere around, you know, beginning of the year. I might have been Galaxy or some Galaxy Digital said, you know, they were being conservative, saying 14 billion of maybe flows from, you know, passive folks in the first year. I think that probably dwarfed, that was way under what's potentially coming. But listen, if that's correct, it's just simply a matter of flows. And that same pattern of reflexivity that you see in certain stocks, I think is now going to move at least to Bitcoin. And for anyone who said, it was about a year ago on Real Vision, I remember saying, look, I like NVIDIA. I sold it way too soon. That was when it was 250 and nobody thought it would go to, you know, a lot of people thought 500 was overvalued, 800 it's overvalued. Well, it's that same idea as money just keeps flowing into what's moving and what's working. I'm saying that party is now joining Bitcoin. I think it's even surprising, you know, potentially some of the crypto folks who weren't expecting new highs till after the halving and that type of thing. And here we are again. I don't think a lot of people felt like that was going to happen as fast as it did. And I'm saying it doesn't really surprise me that much because this much flows that meets, you know, an asset where there's a little bit of scarcity. And what do you get? Higher prices in a short order of time. So to be clear, I wouldn't be buying Bitcoin here. But if you bought it, say where I was highlighting it on Twitter a couple of weeks ago, you sit tight because I think the larger trend is just getting going. And we've really, Ash, I mean, let's think about it. You've been covering this space a long time.
Yeah.
And I've been involved at least in Bitcoin since 2015. How many institutions could really buy it or were willing to, you know, get involved and open their own Coinbase accounts or do cold storage or take things, right. You know, and custody and manage them themselves? Very right. Few.
Well, listen, I don't have a crystal ball here either. Obviously not financial advice. If crypto is known for anything, it's surprising all of us. The price could go down tomorrow. But the reality is, to your broader point here, this idea is that you have essentially the ability for new folks to come into the market because there's just a lot of people out there who have a relationship with a wealth manager, who have a relationship with an RIA, who simply have not been able to buy these products. Now, I don't know what that's going to mean for price in the short term or the long term, but it's certainly a factor to be considered. And I think it's so important you express it so eloquently in terms of the market plumbing argument, at least in favor. In terms of what's going to happen, we're all going to have to see. I just want to ask you this one other question. I know this one's a little outside your wheelhouse here, but something that's happening in markets right now, New York Community Bancorp, NYCB, really getting hammered here again today. The reason that this may or may not be significant, at least in terms of the news cycle here, is that essentially the CEO left the company a couple of days ago, I believe, over essentially misstatement, I don't want to use the wrong word here, but challenges with the way that they were reporting their potential loan losses. The concern here is that this may be a broader story with community banks and not just specific to NYCB. Any thoughts on this?
Well, not other than the fact that, you know, listen, this really started sort of 5 weeks ago when stocks started sort of selling off massively. Right now, doesn't look like there's a whole lot of contagion or worry in the general market. This is where, you know, I would just be watching. And listen, there's no question the market is stretched in the short term. So yeah, look, if these worries, you know, start to spread that we're going to have, you know, regional bank funding issues, and similar to say last almost exactly a year ago when it sort of started with some of the smaller banks, and then the Fed, you know, opened up sort of special facilities, swapping, you know, treasuries.
It was last March, right? It was almost exactly a year ago.
Yeah.
Let me just read this from Bloomberg here, because I don't want to misstate the story here. Fitch Rating cut its assessment to non-investment grade, and Moody's Investor Service, which already had a junk rating on the bank, lowered it even further. Friday's route followed the bank's disclosure that it replaced its chief executive officer after finding, quote, material weaknesses in how it tracks its loan risk. So again, the story right now seems to be focusing on this bank, but obviously when we talk about what happened 12 months ago, of course, the concern of a greater contagion risk, at least in theory.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to be super critical to ratings agencies, but, you know, that's like, they're showing up after the house is already kind of burned down and handing out fines. You know, that isn't that surprising. And this is where, listen, like I said, if we start to see, you know, this as a trend in overall banks, yeah, I think you're going to see pressure hit the general market. Right now, though, it doesn't seem to be. Again, the market is shrugging that off. The other point I would made earlier in terms of this rally, the market needs a wall of worry. Well, fears over bank contagion, fears of inflation coming back, fears of recession. So far, it's shrugged all those things off. And this just seems to be one more of them.
Well, Mark, Richie, you have been absolutely on fire for this conversation. If we keep going like this, we're going to have a Mark Richie the second week. Unfortunately, we're out of time here, but I wanted to give you a chance, 30 seconds or less. Final thoughts, key takeaways that you'd like to leave our viewers and our listeners with.
Well, you know, as I said before, we're sitting here, new breakouts on a number of areas. I would be looking to see how those are received, even Bitcoin, as you mentioned. When markets do what you don't expect is when you want to sort of pay attention, and that works both ways. So we would expect Bitcoin to pause and pull back. If it doesn't, or the pullback is very shallow, it just speaks that much more volumes to how strong the potential trend is. Same applies to equities, same applies to gold. I would be watching to see how these, you know, markets that are a bit extended act, and the ones that pull back the least are going to be your strongest likely going forward.
Mark Richie, the seconds. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here, Ash.
Great conversation. Thanks again for watching. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back tomorrow, same time. See you all then. Have a great afternoon, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. At Real Vision, we arm you with the expert knowledge, time-efficient tools, and a powerful network to help you succeed on your financial journey. Get a taste of financial freedom with our free offer at realvision.com/free.